Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. Brad, welcome in.
Thank you, Ben. Glad to be here.
So I know you've done higher profile interviews, but there will be none that are more hard hitting than this. I want to ask you, growing up, where did you grow up? Where did you come from? What did you study in school? On down the list, I'll turn it to you to get started, to give people context of who Brad the human being actually is and where he comes from.
Born in Pennsylvania and lived there till the end of the fourth grade. My dad got transferred and ended up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And so fifth grade onwards, met Trish in high school. And that's why I ended up going to engineering school up in Canada, because we were dating. And actually, Trish and I got married when I was halfway through engineering school. And as soon as I graduated, I said I wanted to move back to, you know, the States. And so moved back to the States. We lived in Michigan for a little bit, then Ohio for a little bit, then Northern Virginia. In 1982, we moved here to Georgia. We've been here now for 40 years. This is home. This is where we raised our family. This is where I built my business.
Talk to me quickly, and you ran through that faster than most people. They get wrapped up in the good old days. Where did you first move when you were living in Atlanta?
When we moved here first, we lived in Duluth before the mall had been built. And then we moved into Peachtree Corners. And then we moved over to Lilburn, lived there for a while, and then over to Johns Creek in 1998.
Did you send your kids to Parkview?
Our kids were in the Parkview School District, yes.
That makes two of us now. That is something I did not know. I grew up, when my dad got transferred in the early 90s, he was in the Marine Corps working at the recruiting station, and that was in downtown Atlanta. And we looked in two places. One was Alpharetta and the other was Gwinnett County. And at the time, all they knew were headlines and fastest growing community in the country. And every day since I have lived in Alpharetta, they think, man, we should have moved over there. At some point, talk about your business, because I don't think a lot of people know this, but you grew a very successful civil engineering company. Can you talk about that?
We're a specialty contractor. So what we do is we design, supply, and install. So we do post-tension concrete structures. We do structural restoration, carbon fiber strengthening. And then we also supply barrier cable, which you'll see along parking garages, things like that. So diversified, we've about 125 to 150 employees.
Wow, that's great. You don't find a lot of people running for statewide office that come from a background in commercial construction. So kudos to you. Do you still have a lot to do with the ins and outs of the daily business, or is being the Secretary of State more of the full-time job?
Secretary of State's full-time, particularly after the 2020 election. So my son, Kyle, he just turned 40. He runs the business on a day-to-day basis. He's our president.
Well, we will get to after 2020, but I want to ask you how you first get into thinking about public service. I know you sat on the Johns Creek City Council, but that's nobody's first step in their brain. What got you interested in working and investing in your community in a different way?
I was looking at really what was going on nationally. This is, say, 2005, 6, 7. And I was just kind of frustrated, what's happening? And then I thought, well, there's not really anything I can do about that, because I'm running my business full time. You know, I'm still the one that's sealing all the plans as, you know, the chief engineer. I'm making most of the sales for the company and then running it. And so I was pretty darn busy. And then lo and behold, we ended up with a new city of Johns Creek. And so that just kept on building. And then an opening came up. And when Dan didn't run for re-election back in 2011.
Moody.
No. This was a city council member.
Oh.
For city council. But so I ran Dan McCabe. Yeah. Was one of the inaugural council members. So I ran, you know, for his spot, post two, and that's how I ended up on city council. I thought, well, I can do that. You meet twice a month. You have a planning meeting before the big meeting. And so I can do that. And so I ran for city council, and it was just a way of giving back and being involved to be part of solutions instead of just, you know, being frustrated that you didn't have, you know, maybe you didn't really... you weren't doing something, and maybe I just didn't want to be a complainer. So what could I do to make Johns Creek better? And as a new city, you know, Johns Creek has come a long, long way. I'm really excited to see what we did on council, but also the new council. I'm excited to see what you've all done in Alpharetta. It's just great to see what's happened in Milton.
How much do you continue to pay attention to the inner workings, knowing that your life has drastically changed? How much do you continue to pay attention to what happens in your community?
Well, we vote, but I let council do what they're doing, and I cheer them on because the most important thing is that the council gets along and works together. They don't agree on all the issues, but it's really important that you let them do their work, take citizen input. But obviously, Johns Creek is looking at a big, major Avalon 2 type project, and I wish them success, that it becomes, you know, the dream for all of the citizens, that when it's done, they say, what a gem that was for their community. But I let them do their work. That's their lane, not my lane.
Not your lane, but I know anybody who's ever done it still reads the paper thinking, I wonder what these guys are doing today.
No, that's their lane.
Talk to me about your decision. Lynn Riley is a friend of both of ours who works in Governor Kemp's administration now, who was a state house member for two, three terms.
She's in her third term, and then after when Governor Deal was reelected, he then appointed her as the revenue commissioner. She was an outstanding state representative, and so I ran for that open seat, and I won in a special election.
What process did you think about when you were looking into whether or not you wanted to make that change? Was it something different that you felt kind of pulling on you, knowing that you enjoyed sitting on the city council and making a difference where you lived? What were the things that pulled on you as a potential candidate for state house?
Well, at the state house, you really get to look at state issues. So you're obviously looking at what's best for your district, but then what is really for the best thing for the whole state. So when I was in the General Assembly, even though the federal government never got their act together and funded the port, you know, Governor Deal and the General Assembly made sure that we were making sure that we were deepening the port, getting ready for the Panamax ships, things like that. And so that's why I just really enjoyed that. How do you really make sure that we have great schools? Obviously, North Fulton has great schools, but how do you do that statewide? But then you're also rubbing shoulders with state reps that are, you have really your urban reps, but then your rural reps, different, both political parties. How do you work together? So we looked at what is your state energy policy? I was on the energy committee. I was on the insurance commission committee. So you have really a statewide perspective, and yet you always want to make sure you're paying attention to your local district.
When you look back at that time, what are you the most proud of with respect to the investments that you made or legislation that you sponsored? What do you feel like really stands out in your mind, having been removed from that for several years? What are you really proud of besides the port? Is there specific legislation or resolutions or causes that you're proud of today?
Well, legislatively, as soon as I got down there, we passed in the House a millage reduction of one, based if you're 70 years or older, you get a $30,000 homestead exemption, elevate on your deduction. So that would save you taxes. And then also everyone would have had a $30,000 that went over and didn't pass through the Senate side. But I was excited about that. And then being able to renew your corporations for up to 3 years, one, two, or 3 years. I passed that through the House, introduced that. That idea came from a business owner. I said, that's a great idea. If you can renew and buy a website for 5 years or 10 years, why can't you renew your corporation for up to 3 years?
I do the three. So thank you.
And 25% of all Georgians are doing 2 or 3 year renewal options. It's 1, 2, or 3 years, your choice. And I, you know, we obviously passed the bill, but then I made sure we got that implemented as Secretary of State. And then we also had a bill that was going after the Fulton County tax commissioner. He was earning fees off of people that suffered hardship. And it didn't sound like much, 50 cents per parcel. But when you have 50,000 parcels, it adds up. Or when you have 70,000 parcels, it starts adding up to a major number. So we removed the ability of a tax commissioner to charge that 50-cent fee with people that became delinquent, particularly due to hardship. So I thought that was, you know, making sure I looked out for small business owners and people that were suffering financial hardship. Those were the big things. But my biggest probably takeaway, not so much the legislation, was that I was really, I really respected working in the State House of Representatives. You're giving up, you know, really 3 to 4 months of your time to give back to your state.
For essentially nothing.
Well, for at that time, about $18,000 a year. But when I first showed up,
for essentially
they just
nothing.
Plop you down, they give you the open seat, and I had next to me on one side was a liberal Democrat named Erica Thomas, and then on the left side, I guess the right side was liberal, on the left side was a more conservative, moderate Democrat. Her and her husband owned a funeral home. Erica Thomas had been raised in foster care. But so we had conversations, you know, about bills. Now, they didn't vote for my Republican bills. I didn't vote for their, quote, Democrat bills. But we all did vote for the budget because you have to balance a budget. But we had conversations. And that's one of my one takeaway up in Washington. I think instead of having left side and right side of the aisle, I think they ought to turn into a big mosh pit where you just sit amongst members of both political parties and you have conversations. I think that's really helpful. Just like when you're going to get a Coke or a coffee, we went into the cloakroom there on the side in the anteroom, and it was everyone from both political parties. There wasn't, oh, the Democrats are over here, the Republicans are over there. It was just really that you had more conversations, sidebar conversations, and I think that was really good. I think we had a lot of mutual respect, civil discourse, and I really think that's a key part of how we, you know, really win and get America back on the right track.
When you make the decision to ultimately run for Secretary of State, obviously being a business owner had a tremendous impact on what weighed on you in that way. What else was it about seeking that office and knowing that there was a shakeup, you know, with Governor Kemp coming in and Governor Deal going out, knowing that there was going to be some reshuffling? What pulled at you the most about wanting to seek that office? And talk to me about that first campaign and the decision to do that on a statewide basis, because David Bell Lyle told me that until you have driven to 150 something counties, you have no idea how big Georgia is.
Georgia is a big state. We're in one of the largest states east of the Mississippi. So you look on a map and say, boy, New York State's a big state. No, Georgia's bigger. And so it's a big state, and we have 159 counties. That's 159 county election boards, 159 sheriffs, 159, you just multiply it. It's a lot of places. But I had a bill in the state house that you had to be an American citizen to be on any government board commission authority. So I've always felt strongly that only American citizens should be voting in our elections. We also needed new voting machines. And there's, I think everyone agreed that we needed new machines. The old DREs were, really lived past their useful life. The software hadn't been updated since 2005. And so I thought that would be a great way to really make sure we had updated machines with a verifiable paper ballot. Also, the ability to join ERIC, which is the Electronic Registration Information Center, which is really a multi-state organization that's led by the states, not by the feds. So that if you move to Florida, and Florida's a member of ERIC, like we are now, and if you move there and register, Florida will tell us about that so we can take you off the voter rolls objectively instead of subjectively. We had had a lot of people complaining and some lawsuits saying you're removing these people subjectively. Well, I'm an engineer. We can do things objectively. Hard data points. I think that just, it takes out a lot of the arguing, and I think it helps build trust. But also as a business owner, I thought corporations is important. I'm a licensed structural engineer. I'm also a general contractor. Nursing is our largest profession, but I think licensing, and if we do anything with licensing reform, and then securities and charities. And I think we have charities. You just want them to be good players that are, you know, getting as much back into the mission field as possible. So in North Fulton, you know, we have No Longer Bound. We have, you know, North Fulton Charities. We have a lot of great charities that are really giving back, you know, to the mission field. And you want to just make sure you have good operators. So I think it just touched a lot of different things for us as a business owner. It's a great place for a business owner to be. You don't have to be a lawyer. I think attorney generals, they need to be lawyers, you know, because you're dealing with the law every day. And so it's a way of giving back, you know, for the entire state.
When you think about the beginning parts of that campaign, besides the size of Georgia, I want to ask a question that is super inside. Unless you've run a race, you will not appreciate this. How many signs did you have? Because I feel like anywhere I went in the state of Georgia, I saw Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State, signs.
Well, probably a couple thousand or something like that. We had a lot of signs, large ones. But what I understood very quickly is no one knows who their state rep is. Now, if you're in rural districts, they know who their state reps are. But in our suburban districts, no one really knows who their state reps are. So it's really, how do you get your name out there? That who is this guy with the funny last name?
Well, you did it.
And so just to kind of build some name recognition.
Well, you did it. As you progress early in your administration, we'll call it, as the Secretary of State, what would you say that you were proud of prior to 2020? And then as we get into 2020, I would imagine that you lived not with the anonymity of a city council member like you did in the early days of your career in public service. But I have heard it said there are no super PACs for secretary of open seats in Secretary of State. What would you, how did that change as the profile began to change in the early part of that Trump administration? Could you still go to the grocery store and live in relative anonymity?
Oh, absolutely. We took office. What surprised me actually in January 2019, so when I ran, we were focused on getting new voting machines, number one, then joining Eric and some things like that. And so we introduced House Bill 316. We wrote that bill, got it through the General Assembly, which authorized us to go out and secure new machines. But also, my first day of office, I had 9 lawsuits from Stacey Abrams, Fair Fight, Fair Count, and all her other allied organizations. And I wasn't expecting that. And I don't think most people would have been expecting that. And it was based on the myth of stolen election claims. Meanwhile, we had record registrations, record turnout in the 2018 election. But Stacey Abrams came up short by about 55,000 votes.
And what is always, what I can't believe never gets said about Representative Abrams is that she didn't force a runoff in a 3-way race. I would point that out every opportunity that I had. It was not that she lost. The fraudulent claims is, we will get to a place where people can argue about stolen elections. But I think that it stands to reason, like, if you can't force a runoff in a 3-way race, how are you ever going to claim to be disenfranchised? And I think the other thing that is really interesting about her is that the local election boards where she likes to complain are governed largely by Democrats.
I think not just largely are, because if you look at that Fulton DeKalb, that's really the historic areas where you had issues, and particularly really going back to 2018. But that said, we took office and we hit the ground running. We secured legislation. It was signed into law by the governor along with a bond issue. So then we put out the RFP and got proposals. And then the team went through qualifying the bids. And then we had a low apparent bidder. And then we had to get the machines in place before the presidential primary of 2020. We hit the ground running. That was the largest and the fastest implementation of voting machines that's ever happened in America. And we got it done ready for the presidential primary. And we voted on those machines for about 2 weeks. COVID hit it, really started rearing its ugly head in about week one. And then the General Assembly shut down in mid-March. We were in the second week of early voting. And that's when we had to postpone. And that's when you voted in a COVID environment for the balance of 2020.
Is there any part of the decisions that got made with drop boxes from you? And I'm asking you to be introspective, and I'm asking you to own whether or not you think there was a mistake. Do you feel like the drop boxes were, do you look back and have any regrets over how it went?
No, because there's been a lot of misinformation, disinformation that's been put out there. First of all, if you looked at current state law in 2019, 2020, pre-COVID, that temporary receiving receptacles were allowed. That's how they called them. They weren't called drop boxes. So in other words, once we went into a COVID environment, there's very few guardrails around the drop boxes. What we did through the state election board, it said these drop boxes, since we can't stop them, they're going to have to require to be on government property and under 24/7 video surveillance. And so that's how that came about. At the same time, what was also going on, and that from a national narrative, the United States Postal Service was, the director of the Postal Service was openly saying that he couldn't guarantee if the ballots would be delivered. And so by having the drop boxes, that took that off the table from the standpoint of a lawsuit. So the state election board made sure they crafted a bill with drop boxes that allowed them to be only on government property under 24/7 video surveillance.
After November of 2020, I would imagine that you could no longer go to the grocery store in relative anonymity. Is that a fair statement?
I would think that'd be a fair statement.
How did your life, I'm not even going to ask you like from a political standpoint, because I think that those interviews are everywhere. Those testimonies are everywhere. But what doesn't get talked about a lot was how did your life change?
Well, from the standpoint.
He took a breath, so I know I've got him.
No, you don't have me. It's just that the day, shortly thereafter the election, then President Trump came up short. He was leading. But what was happening is absentee ballots, particularly ones that haven't been scanned prior to election day. And so the state election board told counties that they could go ahead and they could have those ballots scanned. So all you have to do is press the tabulation button. Some of the larger counties didn't do that. And so you're waiting. But those are predominantly very strongly leaning Democrat counties, i.e. Fulton and DeKalb.
Absolutely.
So what happened, it was a close election, but then it flipped over, and then President Trump was actually trailing, you know, Vice President Biden. But allegations then started coming out that there's all these dead people. And so we immediately went out and we checked. We went through everything and we verified. At the time, we found two dead people. Since then, we found two more, just a total of four dead people.
But not even a handful.
Not even a handful. But those are the kind of allegations that you had. Then people said that there's all these underage voters, because what they were looking at is their birth year. But we had the day, month, year, and we knew that and we'd actually checked all 66,000 of these so-called alleged underage voters. They all turned 18 before election day. So we wanted to make sure we ran down that trail, had the data points, and we could then knock that one down. Then they said that there was over 2,000 felons that voted. Well, we checked every single one of those records, and we verified that there was less than 74 that were under felony sentence. So once you've completed your time in Georgia, then you are eligible to vote. And so there was less than that. So there weren't thousands of that. We looked at non-registered, every allegation that was made. And then the next one would have been the State Farm Arena. And that myth still is out there. And we called in WSB after it got aired and they sliced and diced the video out of sequence. We got WSB, look at the whole run of tape here. We then called in the GBI. Then we called in the FBI. And so they said, well, you can't trust the FBI. And so I said, well, and I said this to a Tea Party group up in LJ. I said, if President Trump could handpick someone to look at that, would you then be comfortable whatever that result is? And they said, yes. I said, well, you have to be, that I need to let you know that President Trump did do that. And they look at me. And I said, yes, because when BJ Pack resigned as the U.S. Attorney of the Northern District, President Trump handpicked Bobby Christine from the Southern District coming out of Savannah. And that's one of the first things that Bobby Christine looked at. And I put that in my book. I also put that in my 10-page letter to Congress. And Bobby Christine, he knows I use that all the time. He's now the prosecuting attorney of the DA out in Columbia County. He's a law and order kind of guy. But he looked at that specifically and said, yeah, we watched the video. We interviewed and talked to all the people that were there that night.
And Columbia County is very, very conservative.
Yeah, it's like Forsyth County or Cherokee County, things like that. Very Republican.
When you look, were there things that you had to change about how you kind of lived on a daily basis? Did you have a lot of security that you didn't have a month prior? Did you have people that have to look at after you? Like, I can't imagine. You read the internet, and everybody on the internet has an opinion. How, and I'll say it out loud. You did the right thing. But how did you balance that? Because on some level that has to wear on you, just knowing that you could be somebody's public enemy number one, two, or three, while doing the right thing, knowing that you are grounded and knowing that they have the bully pulpit and they have any resource available to make your life hard.
You have to keep in perspective that Georgia's been a reliably Republican state for presidents, probably pushing 30 years. And so all of a sudden...
Since Clinton.
That was a shock to our system. And so all of a sudden, that woke up a lot of us and what happened here? And it was not a good thing. And so I understand that. And then there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation that was out there. And on a good day, our office may have had up to 40,000 Twitter followers, and other people had millions and millions of Twitter followers. And you just can't compete against
other people who will remain nameless.
Yeah, big blowtorches of information. And so we do the best you can, and you get out there. And so you just really want to, eventually what I decided to do is just go out and talk to groups. So first Republican group that invited me was Bartow County. Went up there, I believe that would have been April of 2021. And talk to them. They asked hard questions. They didn't.
And should have.
And they should. But I just calmly said, here are the facts. And then one gentleman had some more questions. I said, well, I'll put you in touch with our state election director. And so we went through, some data points for that. But we wanted to make sure that we were always giving people, facts. It reminds me somewhat, if you have grandkids, you go see movies like Peter Rabbit 2, but Barnabas, the street rabbit, gets Peter Rabbit in an uncomfortable spot. And Peter Rabbit looks at him and says, but you lied to me. And Barnabas says, well, it's so easy to get people to believe, it's so easy to deceive people when they want to believe. And so people just couldn't believe it. And that's why I went out and I talked to, whatever Republican Party meetings would have me in, but Rotary, Kiwanis, Chamber, all across the state. I would talk to people. I went on some very conservative radio shows for 1 to 1.5 hours. And so the John Frederick Show had me on. I hope it's okay to talk about other radio people, but I just took calls from all over the country. But folks, I know I appreciate that you're from, states, parts yonder, but I'm the Secretary of State of Georgia. And so I want to talk about Georgia, but I took their calls and I just went through the data points bit by bit. I wrote a book to set the record straight. And we'll continue to investigate any information we have. We said any allegation we have, we will check it out, and we do prosecute. And I've actually had more prosecutions in my 4 years than any other Secretary of State has had in their, up to 8 to 10 years of holding this office. So we do prosecute, and we've investigated a lot.
Somebody that we both know, and I use this as an example if I'm on the radio, when people get up in arms about whether or not the election was or was not stolen. John Albers is somebody that we both know who is a state senator and represents most of Roswell, some of Cherokee County, and then a little bit of Alpharetta, and I think a little bit of Johns Creek as well. The former president lost his district by percentage points. And he John Albers outperformed him by almost 10 points in his district. You're not going to say anything, but you're smiling. The president did not lose the state of Georgia because it was stolen. The president lost the state of Georgia because he lost the suburbs. I will say that until the cows come home. And for everybody out there, when you keep sending people up who are people that suburban women in Roswell can't vote for, they're going to struggle statewide against formidable opponents. And they didn't necessarily dislike how the president governed. They would not elect a bully, and they didn't care what his politics were.
Well, I will answer it the way I've been answering at all my Rotary meetings. Here's what happened in 2020. 28,000 Georgians skipped the presidential ballot. They didn't vote for anyone. They didn't vote for Donald J. Trump. They didn't vote for Joseph R. Biden or Joe Jordan. They left a blank. And yet they voted down ballot in other races. the Republican congressmen collectively received 33,000 more votes than President Trump. And then there were situations like Senator Albers. You mentioned that he received a higher percentage total than
President
Trump. And I know that even in a rural area down in Ashburn, Georgia, which is in Turner County, South Georgia, near Tifton, the state representative Clay Perkel got about 70% of the vote, and President Trump got 63% of the vote. But those two examples of state reps and state senators, those are really solid guys, and they were very close in their districts. People knew and they trusted them, and they're strong performers every year.
They are.
They're good people, and there's a lot of good people in the state house and state senate, by the way. And I've made that point, and I'll give a shout out to Senator Albers all day long because he's a good man.
My kind of where I want to see, knowing that that is behind you, and knowing that you set in I would guess it's seldomly contested Republican primary for reelection in which you had three challengers. Did it surprise you at all to be north of 50% without a runoff, knowing what you had been through, knowing what you were on the other side of? Does it resonate to you that regardless of everything that happened to you over an 18-month period, it may not be over. I'm sure it's not over. Do you feel really vindicated by the fact that you sent three people home without a runoff?
I think it's more of an issue that in my heart of hearts, I just thought that most people are good, and I just really need to go out and talk to them. And that's why I just travel, and I put a lot of miles on my truck just to try and meet with anyone that I could in groups. And that's what I thought. I just really felt that most people are good. So I look at it that I got 52% of the vote in the Republican primary. But of the 48%, I just feel like a lot of those people, if I could really have an opportunity to come out and talk to them, that I could win a whole bunch of them. I know that there'll be some that I just won't for whatever reason. But I just believe that most people are good, and I really believe that most Georgians are wonderful. And I think Luke Bryan, that's why he wrote that song, because it's so true that people are good. And when you start giving the hard truth, but they can ask you any question, you just stand there and answer it calmly, rationally, factually. I think that's really important. I think that's really what's wrong, and that's where people are struggling right now in America. I think we're not having enough civil discourse. I think it gets down to, you know, character, integrity, civil discourse. And to quote Ronald Reagan, a touch of kindness. You can be conservative and still be kind.
The last question I have for you is that when the January 6th committee, and yes, I will call it bipartisan, I don't know if they had to subpoena you or just asked you to testify.
No, they subpoenaed me.
They probably just could have asked.
No, there's a process and it's a subpoena. But I honor subpoenas.
Yeah, I won't even get into that. Was there some, when you went, what was the preparation that it takes to sit down and imagine with your team, you know, from the state of Georgia? I know your COO, Gabriel Sterling, was one who sat there, and I know Jordan as well, although I don't think she testified. Did you have any idea what they were going to ask you about? And how do you prepare for something like that?
I didn't really prepare because I've lived it. And so I wrote a 10-page letter to Congress. It was dated January 6th. And that's when they got it, about 12 to 12:30 that day. I worked with my general counsel. We started a couple of days earlier, just going through point by point rebuttal of the four key points. So that was in the congressional record already. And then I'd written a book, and I had a phone call with the president. So everything's out there. It was all in public record. So I just showed up there, and they asked them some questions. They actually had copies of my book there. I thought it made me smile a little bit.
Did you sign any?
No. But it was, but they had things, and they just, if you need to refer to your book, and so I maybe a few times did, but I kind of pretty much knew what was in it since we wrote it. So it's like, yeah, it was a little bit about, you know, Trish and I meeting in high school, getting me married over 40 years, building a business, losing a son, having setbacks in business, you know, then being on city council, giving a shout out to Governor Deal for criminal justice reform in my book. That was before I got into the state house, but he'll always have a soft spot for Governor Deal because of that.
Do you if you had something to tell people, are you grateful for the Congressman Kinzinger and Cheney for being willing to put their name on a committee to get to the bottom and truly investigate it on behalf of the American people?
I respect people that have moral courage. General Patton talked about that. He actually said moral courage is the most difficult thing in effect of what we find in human beings. And I know that these are really hard things to hear, but I think we need to hear what the truth is. And you know, then it's out there and everyone can weigh in on it and make their own decisions. But I think that's very important. I think moral courage to do that, regardless of political cost, is very important.
Secretary Raffensperger, thank you for coming on the Ben Burnett Show. I know your time is wildly sought after, but it's really good to have a different conversation around somebody that people in the metro area can relate to, from just a humble local public servant to a guy who got the, you know, brunt end of the stick from the president. You've kind of run the gambit here with every level of state government you can have. And I'll ask you this in the future. I think your odds in November are really, really good for having done the right thing. And I think that Democrats will remember that.
I want everyone to remember that, because as Secretary of State, I'm the Secretary of State for everyone. I'm just like your ref that's officiating an SEC game. You want to make sure that if it's an SEC game versus the Big Ten, you don't want a ref from either one. You want someone that's just going to call it down the middle. And I want to give also people a great hope and confidence in the system. When we introduced and passed SB 202, the Election Integrity Act of 2021, what that did is added a day of early voting. It was the second Saturday that we got. We had record turnout, and it was bipartisan. It came from both sides, but we look at the turnout we had. 1.9 million people showed up in the primary, and then we now have photo ID for all forms of voting. We have photo ID for absentee voting. What that does is it shores up security, and by shoring up security, it elevated confidence. When you have confidence, that's good for everyone. And so I think people are really, you know, responding to that, and I'm expecting big turnout this year. And I want everyone, if you're not registered to vote, please register to vote. Check out the candidates. But I would encourage you to all vote, and I'm grateful for anyone that supports me.
This has been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you.
When it comes to building your business, no one knows it quite like you. But taking the next step to innovate it, grow it, expand it, that takes a special kind of know-how. The First Horizon Commercial Banking team in Atlanta brings a depth of experience and insights that builds on the bank's deep balance sheet capabilities. So you don't have to choose between building a bank that knows how to optimize your growth strategies and one that is fully equipped to help you execute every part of them. Visit firsthorizon.com to find a banker near you.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.